May we have only good news. Boker Tov to everyone. Yes.
I just, on behalf of all of us, I would like to thank Sharon again for that absolutely wonderful morning. And so,
we missed that. And just want to say, as an addendum, and thanks to that morning, wonderful morning, and seeing that I actually bought a painting at the auction. I actually got one.
Okay, Gabby, thank you so much for your hospitality. I'm thrilled to be here. I'm fresh off of the plane. About 45 minutes ago, I said to myself, I'm way too tired to give a shiur. I came in, I saw all of you, and it's as if I just woke up refreshed from a long night's sleep. Let's get going. So, Boker Tov, I'm delighted to greet everyone. This is the second class in our study of Iyov. Now, I don't know how long it's going to take us to get through the book of Iyov, and that's very much based upon the pace that you decide to, that you decide to move me at. But what I want to say is that I think that it's very important when you're studying a book of Iyov that's dealing with such a central philosophical issue as faith in the face of suffering, that it's very important to hear different views and not necessarily one view. So today, I'm going to be taking a view which is not my own. It's a view of which I'm critical. So I had mentioned this last week. I had mentioned Rabbi Soloveitchik's view of Iyov, and that I find it very, very difficult. We're going to look at it today. So if you have difficulty with what we're learning today, I'm with you. But I think it's very important. I think it's important to build a structure. Now, let's review the storyline. The story of Iyov occurs in the first two chapters as well as the last chapter. The central portion of the book has to do with philosophical discussion. The story itself happens in Perek Aleph, chapter 1 and chapter 2, and then we have a prologue to the story. What happens in the middle of the book, the central part of the book, is that initially Iyov speaks. We'll see if we get up to that today or not. Cursing the day that he was born and expressing his wish for death. Thereafter, his three friends who come to comfort him speak. They speak a total of three times. They become progressively more critical of Iyov as they go along. Each time Iyov responds. After he has responded three times, the penny drops for them that they're not going to convince him. And then there's another speaker, and then God intervenes and addresses Iyov. So that's the structure of the book. Let's remember the storyline, and then let's go into today's shiur. The storyline is what? That there was a man, Ishaya be'eretz Utz, Iyov Shmo, there was a man in the land of Utz. You remember I mentioned last time that all of the nomenclature of the book of Iyov comes from the early patriarchal period. Afterwards, these names never again appear in Tanakh. Names such as Utz, et Utz b'choro, ve'et Buz, the descendants of Betuel, a name like Shuach, Bildad HaShuchi, Shuach is one of Abraham's sons. Other names within the book are all associated with the patriarchal period. And the same thing, the land of Kedem, Ish Hayah, the Eretz Utz, and he is the wealthiest man. A man is in the land of Utz, he's the wealthiest man in the land of Kedem. Eretz Kedem occurs, and I showed you this last time, frequently during the patriarchal period, including Yaakov's last week's parsha, Yaakov's fleeing to Eretz B'nei Kedem, to the land of B'nei Kedem. It's important to remember, for this class it's very important to remember, that these are all names associated with the patriarchal period. Now you remember last time we read the Gemara in Bava Batra, in which you had various people placing this story at different points in history. When did Iyov live? Iyov was amongst those who came out of Egypt. Iyov lived in the time of the judges. Rabbi Yochanan says Eyov lived in Tveria, and Eyov was one of the people who came from Babylonia, and he lived in Tveria. And I mentioned to you that Rabbi Yochanan lived in Tveria, and he had lost 10 sons. And then you have Reish Lakish saying, Eyov lo hayah v'lo nivra, that he never was created. This is not a historical story. This is a metaphorical story. This comes to teach us something. So I had mentioned, in fact, Sharon, you were the one who had interpreted Reish Lakish's words exactly as I do, that the words you used last time were that he's saying that Eov is every man. He's saying when Eov is placed in many different periods, it's another way of saying there always is an Eov. Let's go back to the storyline. Ishayav Eretz Utz. There was a man in the land of Utz. His name was Eyov. We saw last month that his holdings were huge. They were vast holdings. You noted that everything added up to 10. You know, sense of fullness. The system which is based, the mathematical system based upon 10 is a very, very easy system to follow. He had 500 of this and 500 of that, and 5,000 of this and 5,000 of that, or wait, what was it? He had 500 atonot, 500 donkeys, and he had 500 heads of pairs of cattle. The cattle are the tractors, and the donkeys are carrying all of the equipment. And you saw he has, how many is it? 3,000 camels. That's a fleet of trucks. This man is vastly wealthy. Then we heard about his children. What was the story about his children?
10 children.
He has 10 children. Again, you see that number, the number of completion, perfection, repeating itself. He has 10 children. And the description of his children was, what do they do?
They
all go to each other's homes, and they feast each day in the home of another one of the brothers. The three sisters, the second set of daughters are going to have names. But these three sisters are not part of the cycle. They're invited to come to their brothers' homes. And what about Eyov? Every time they're finished the cycle of going from one house to the next house to the next house to the next house and dining together, then what would Eyov do?
He'd bring a korban.
He'd bring an offering, a sacrifice, a korban, because he feared that they what?
Blasphemed in some way.
Maybe they sinned and blasphemed in some way. And last month I had mentioned that it seems to me that what Eyov is concerned about is, can religion survive plentitude? Can religion go along with the good life? And then we have, and here's where we're going to focus today, we hear that the angels all came before God, and what?
They said,
someone came amongst the angels. Satan came amongst the angels. The angels all came before God, and Satan, Bnei HaElohim, the sons of God, in other words, the angels all come before God, and Satan came together, Satan came together with them, and then you have a conversation. What's the conversation? Who starts the conversation? Take a look at verse 6, chapter 1, verse 6, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Vav. God starts the conversation by saying what? Even before he says that, he says to what? Where have you been? He says to Satan, where have you been? What does Satan say? Mishut ba'aretz u'mihi talechba. I've been proceeding, roaming through the land and walking through it. So far, anything biblical from the book of Bereishit resonating with you here in this pasuk?
Yes.
Kom hitalech ba'aretz la'orcha ulerochba ki lecha etnena. God says to Abraham, when he gives Abraham the land, go and hitalech ba'aretz, walk through the land. So it's life and breath because I will give it to you. Now, Satan has come, and the Gemara is going to notice exactly what you noticed. Satan says, sounds like a benign statement, right? God says, where have you been? And Satan says, well, I've been roaming, walking through the land. And the Gemara is going to say, huh, he's met up with somebody who is also Hitalech Ba'aret, walking through the land. And then you're going to see the Gemara contrasting two personages, one being Eov, who's walking through the land, and the other being Abraham, who's walking through the land. So, in the text, what does God say to Eov? Eov says, I've been walking through the land. What does God say to Eov?
Satan.
I'm sorry, to Satan, thank you. What does God say to Satan? Have you seen anyone who is righteous as my servant Eov? Ishtam v'yashar yirei Elokim v'sar mera. A righteous and what? What's your translation?
A blameless and upright man.
Okay.
Who fears God and shuns evil.
And shuns evil. Now, within the text, what does the Satan say to God?
That's no big deal because you've protected him and
given him.
You know, it's exactly what's going through Eov's mind, because Eov himself has been thinking, maybe my sons are sinning in their hearts because they have so much. And now Satan is saying regarding Eov, well, it's no big deal that he's a righteous man, because he's on the receiving end of your generosity. So, of course, he's going to be righteous. But what? Satan then continues and says what?
Send forth your hand and touch everything that is his, and see if he does not blaspheme you to your face.
Yeah. So you'll see how sincere his religiosity is if you take away what's his. And God answers Satan that what?
Everything.
You can touch everything but what? But not him. Not him. And then we read that his sons are again feasting. And what happens? An attack comes from four directions on everything that Eov has. And Eov is sitting, and this is reported to him. It's reported that what? The first calamity is
the man's attack and carried them off.
Carried who off?
The sons.
No, that's
the
first one is the cattle. The cattle and the donkeys, and Shva, an African tribe, comes and attacks them, does away with them. Then the next thing is fire comes out of heaven, which is lightning. Lightning strikes whom?
The sheep
and the workmen. The sheep and the workmen. And then the next blow comes from
camels.
It comes to the camels from, this time it's coming from the north, not from the south like Shva, but from the north.
The boys mean the servants, right?
Meaning the servants. Sons. No, that's not his sons, the servants. And they steal all of the camels, the fleet of camels, and they kill the workmen. And then the final herald comes and says, each time the herald says, and I'm the only one who survived. And then the final time is what? Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in the home of their eldest brother, and a great wind. So you see, two of the calamities are from heaven, two of the calamities are from man. Eov then gets up, he rends his garments, he shaves his head, which was a biblical custom of mourning, which, by the way, is still maintained by the many of the Ethiopians in Israel. Very interesting. Yeah.
What is
shaving of the head as a sign of mourning. We do the opposite. We do not shave. We do not take a haircut. And they do shave the head. So Eov does then, what does he say? He bows down. What do you think the meaning of bowing down is?
happiness.
Happy?
As you said, I also possibly from the happiness of devoted and just missing. Just suffering so much, you just fall to breath.
That's falling.
There's a sense of acceptance. He realizes that he has been targeted, and he bows before God, and he says, "Hashem natan v'Hashem lakach, yishem Hashem varach." God has given, God has taken. May God be blessed. I have come into the world naked, I will go out of the world naked. Satan, yes?
Since the Satan has set this whole episode into play, and he has been given carte blanche from Hashem to bring all these calamities, how do we have him bringing acts of God, fire and wind? How does the devil have charge of things that we always attribute that Hashem has the power over.
So we assume that the devil has given the power over these accidents. Well,
I can understand the devil using his agent, men on earth, but the devil being able to use the powers of God seems to me a little bit...
Rambam's approach to the book of Iyov is, there are those who say that this is a historical account. There are those who say it is not a historical account. But even those who say it's a historical account cannot possibly say, from the point of the conversation between Satan and God, that this has anything to do with history. In other words, there may have been a man named Iyov. This man named Iyov may have suffered, may have been a very lucky individual initially, and then have had calamities befall him. But what you cannot say occurred historically is this conversation between God and the devil. I'll bring you some different approaches, but that's Rambam's approach, that this is a metaphor in order to introduce us to a discussion of suffering and man's response to suffering. So if it's a metaphor, it's construed situation created by the author of the book of Iyov. Here too, the Gemara in Bava Batra has a discussion of who the author of the book of Iyov is. There is he who attributes the authorship to Moshe, meaning that this was given, a divinely given book, dictated book, and others have different ideas of authorship. So I'll get to that at some point.
It's a parable that we're supposed to learn from. It shouldn't have these that are curses.
But the point is, if God says, do what you want, he's obviously giving a power of attorney to the Satan. So what difference does it make if the power of attorney comes from man or from natural causes? Yeah. In other words, he told him, do what you want. So he did what he wanted with the thunder, he did what he wanted with the lightning. It doesn't answer.
Also, was it natural? Yeah. Yeah. Wasn't it supernatural?
Satan does have the power of natural forces of God.
Right. It's a natural force.
It's forces of nature. Yeah. It's not really a force of God, if you can look at it. It's lightning and it's wind, which is like a force of nature. So,
I'll probably get to this later. Not today. We'll keep that question in mind. Now, let's go further. Next time the Satan appears before God, and God says, where have you been? And he says the same thing. Mishut ba'aretz umihitalech ba. I've been roaming and walking through the land. And keep remembering, it's Abraham who, regarding whom it is said, kum hitalech ba'aretz, rise and walk through the land. So you're going to see in the Gemara a comparison between the two figures. So now God says, have you seen anyone as righteous as Iyov, who still holds on to his pureness and his complete faith in me, and look, you've made me attack him for nothing. And then Satan says, what?
Didn't attack him physically, though.
Yeah, just wait. There's one more thing that I want you to do. And then Iyov is smitten with boils from head to foot. He is in utter physical misery. He's sitting in the dirt, and he's rubbing himself with clay shards. And his wife then, what happens? His wife has the same voice of Satan. His wife says, let's get this over with. God is obviously attacking you. You have been, up until the physical attack, maybe it was possible to attribute it to other causes, but now it's quite clear that God is attacking you. And she says, curse God, bless God, meaning curse God.
And then you'll die.
And then you'll die. And the Eov says what?
Just as I receive the good.
That you're talking like one of the fools. We only receive the good from God and we don't receive the bad. And then we're told Eov didn't sin with his lips, which is a hint that inside very difficult things are happening. Let's go over to our sheets. I brought you the Gemara in Bava Batra. Bava Batra, Tech Vav Amud Bet, and I have this Gemara in Hebrew and in English. The Gemara sees something wrong with Eov, and according to this view, Eov was punished because he needed to learn a lesson. So let's take a look. The Gemara, I'll read first in Hebrew and then in English. Bava Batra, Tech Vav Amud Bet. Vayi Ayom Vayavo Bnei HaElohim Vityatsev Am Hashem. ויבוא גם השטן בתוכם ויאמר השם על השטן מאין תבוא ויען השטן וגומר. That וגומר is very important. What's the וגומר? משוט בארץ ומהתהלך בה. The day came when the angels came to stand before God, and Satan also came amongst them, and God said to Satan, from where do you come? And Satan answered, etc. Etc. is what? From roaming the land and walking through it. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam. Now Satan is speaking to God. Shatati b'chol ha'olam kulo v'lo matzati ne'eman ke'avdecha Avraham. She'amarta lo kum hitalech ba'aretz la'orka u'l'rachba ki lecha etnena. ואפילו האחי בשעה שלא מצא מקום לקבור את שרה עד שקנה ב-400 שקל כסף לא הרהר אחר מידותיך. He said before him, so God said, from where do you come? And Satan answered, etc. He said before him, Satan said before God, Master of the universe, I traversed the entire world and I did not find anyone faithful like your servant Abraham, to whom you said, arise and walk through the land to its length and breadth, for I shall give it to you. And even then, when he did not find a place to bury Sarah, until he purchased it with 400 silver shekels, he did not have second thoughts about your providence. Vayomer Hashem el Satan, Hasamta libcha el avdi Eov ki ein kamohu ba'aretz. God said to Satan, have you noticed my servant Eov, that there is none like him in the land? This Gemara is fantastic. Do you see what's being juxtaposed? You have two voices in this Gemara. I learned how to read this Gemara from Rav Yoel Bin Nun. You have two voices in this Gemara. Who are the two voices? God and Satan. And each one of these voices maintains that they know, it's like mirror, mirror on the wall, that they know who is the most righteous of them all. And according to God, who is the most righteous of them all?
Eov.
According to Satan? Isn't that interesting? According to Satan, the most righteous is not Eov. It's Avraham. According to God, it's Eov. So Satan is mithalech ba'aretz, and of course, in the course of walking through the land, he's meeting that individual who is now walking through the land. Tell me what you think this Gemara is about.
Well, Abraham is no longer alive, so this is in the past.
Well, we don't know. We don't know. Remember, last month we saw that there were many different times of placing Eov, and one of them was during the time of the patriarchs.
Is it a comparison of, I mean, because Abraham's life is so different. Abraham doesn't have children. Abraham doesn't, the way Abraham lives his life.
Eov has children, and Abraham doesn't have children. Eov seems to have life easy, and Abraham seems to have
more problems,
challenges.
But it's also Abraham also lives his life differently. Abraham's out there across the desert. Like, I don't know whether I'm going too far there. But when Abraham, Eov seems complacent living his life and just doing what he's doing, whereas Abraham's out there.
You've got it, Rebecca. You've got it. You've got it. Take a turn to, we looked at this last time, but I want you to look at it again. Turn to Yechezkel, Ezekiel. Turn to Yechezkel chapter, let's see, chapter 14. Ben Adam Eretz Ki Techta. Chapter 14 in Ezekiel, Yechezkel, Pasuk Yudet, 12. If anyone doesn't have a complete Tanakh, you can listen. God said to Ezekiel, saying, to Yechezkel, saying, Ben Adam, Eretz ki techtali, if a land sins to me, Limol ma'al, to rebel, V'natiti yadi alah v'shavarti la matei lechem, V'ishlachti bara'a, V'ichrati mimena Adam uvehema, and if I extend my hand against it and I break its staff of bread and I create famine in the land and I wipe out man and animal, and if these three people are in the land, Noach, Daniel, v'Iyov, Hema b'tzidkatam yinatzlu nafsham ne'um Hashem Elokim, and if these three people are in the land, Noach, Daniel and Eov, what do they all have in common? Eov is Ishaya be'eretz Utz u'shmo Eov. Eov shmo v'haya Ishahu kam v'yashar v'yirei Elokim v'sar meira. And this person was righteous and straightforward and God-fearing, and he distanced himself from evil. You should say immediately that description is remindful of one character in the book of Bereishit, which is who? Noach ish tzadik tamim haya v'dorotav. Noach was a righteous person and perfect in his generations. And the description here is the same thing. Kam v'yashar, perfect and righteous and God-fearing and distancing himself from evil. I want, before we finish Yechezkel, reading in Yechezkel, I want you to grasp for 1 minute. The story of the selection of Noah. Do we have the details? Do we know why he was selected? Ela toldot Noah. Noah ish tzadik, tamim haya v'dorotav. Noah was a righteous person in his generation, and therefore he was selected to survive. Do we know why Abraham was selected? What's the first thing we're told about Abraham?
Lech lecha.
Lech lecha. Go. Go. There is one pasuk in the case of Abraham that does tell us why he was selected. It's not at the beginning. Take a look. Keep your fingers on Yechezkel. So now you have two places in Tanakh already open. But go back to Bereishit, to Genesis. To Bereishit chapter, let's see, Parshat Lech Lecha. No, I'm sorry, Parshat Vayera. Perfect, Suri. Suri, tell us where the reference is. Chapter 18, Sukkim, 18 and 19. Suri, read.
He is Sativ Lamana Shari Tabet Ramabit Beto Akarab Shabu Jerah Hashem Wasok Sakam Mishpat Manabia Shem Alabraham Hashem.
I knew him, or I selected him. You could read it in both of those words. You know that within Tanakh in Hebrew, very often two letters are switched. Like Kivsa and Kisba both mean lamb. There are other examples of the sort. So Yedativ can also mean Yeadativ. I selected him. I knew him, or I selected him, in order that he would command his sons and his household after him to follow the way of Hashem, to do loving kindness, to do charity, and to do justice, in order to bring upon Abraham that which I promised. So what do you have? Noach is selected. Why? What's the difference between the selection of Noach and the selection of Abraham? No, think to yourself, what's the difference? Noach is selected, why? Because he is a righteous man. Ela todot Noach, Noach is tzadik. These are the generations of Noach. Noach was a righteous man. Why was Abraham selected?
Command his children.
What was the word, Hedda?
Command his children.
I missed your first word.
Abraham will command his children.
Not will. He was selected.
He does.
In order to.
He says he will, but I don't like
it. In order to. Ki yedativ lema'an asher. I selected him. I knew him in order that. You hear the difference? You know something fascinating? In the book of Bereishit, we're never told that Abraham is a tzaddik. Never told that he's a tzaddik. One time you are told, after the Akedah, that he's God-fearing. But you're never told that Abraham is a tzaddik. What do we know about Abraham? Who said that? You're right. We know that he's a prophet. You know, I think very often we have this notion of a prophet as a letter carrier, that he receives a letter from God, and he knows the language, he's able to read the language, so he opens up the letter and he's able to read it to us. But that's not the picture of the prophet that we get if we look at the Nevi'im. We're told, Javi, we're going to look in a minute to see where Abraham is called a prophet, ki Navihu, but Noah, we're told why he was selected, and we're told he was a righteous man, and he always a righteous man. Now let's go back to Yechezkel, and then we'll look at Abraham. Yes, Anita.
He was a righteous man for his generation.
Okay, so you're already saying righteous. Not so righteous. And I have to tell you, Rabbi Soloveitchik is going to be with you. Rabbi Soloveitchik is going to be with you this morning. Okay, let's look at Yechezkel. And excuse me, you're saying Abraham, now there was a righteous man. But the Torah never tells us Abraham was righteous. You know, do you think that Abraham, what do you think Abraham did? Did he have his sisters out?
No, but we see his acts of chesed.
You see his acts of chesed. You see, I want to look in a minute and see what Abraham is doing. But Abraham was selected in order that. Noah was selected because he was a righteous person. Now, is there anything wrong with being a righteous person? Noah was a righteous person, and he always was. Now, Yechezkel says something fascinating. He says, the land sins. And there are these three people inside. Who are the three people? Noah, Daniel, and Iyov. It's very interesting. Who's absent?
Abraham.
Abraham is absent. Noah, Daniel, and Iyov. Heima b'tzid katam yenatzlu nafsham, nu'um Hashem Elokim. They in their righteousness will save their souls, their nefesh refers to life. It doesn't refer to what we call neshama. They will save their souls, the testimony of God. And if I have wild animals pass through the land, and the land becomes barren because of the wild animals. And these three men are inside of the city. I swear that they will not be able to save what? their sons and daughters. They alone will be saved. In other words, does Noah can be saved? Yes. But what? He's not going to be able to save, in going through a city, he's not going to be able to save the others. The land will be barren. Or I'll bring a sword through the land and wipe out man and animal. Or if there's a sword that goes through the land, they will not save their children. They will save themselves. So what do you have? And then it goes on. There's another possibility. Or I'll send a plague into that land. I'll send a plague and wipe out man and animal in the land. And Noach, Daniel, and Eov will be in that city. They will not save son and daughter. They will save them. Themselves. Sorry?
So it makes it even stronger why Abraham is left out here, because Abraham is the one who argues for stone to save people, you know, if there was anybody left that was worth saving, and Lot is saved because of Abraham.
You're right. Think to yourself of all of the episodes we know about Avraham Avinu. It's very interesting because we picture Avraham as being the prototype of the righteous Jew, and he certainly is the prototype of the righteous Jew. But it's not because he's walking around with his tzitzis out. Not that I have anything against that. But it's not that he's walking around with his tzitzis out. He's not called righteous because of that. What's he called righteous for? Think of the things that he does. What are the acts of chesed? The first thing we hear is Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. He builds an altar and he calls out in the name of God. Now, we might be tempted to say what that means is he's calling and he's telling people, serve God, go to shul, daven three times a day, that's what you should be doing. But we don't see that in his life. We see Abraham serving God and calling upon God to be righteous, and himself having a sense of being good to other people, being good, being generous. What do we see him doing? We see him pursuing the four kings in order to free the hostages. What else do you see him doing? We see him engaged in bringing in visitors into his home.
He's first good to his wife. He fishes for ten first.
Okay. We see him in relation to his wife pitching the tent. That's good. That's good. What else?
He has to be told to listen to his wife because his first instinct is to keep Ishmael close and not send him out.
Yeah, he says, Lo Yishmael Yichyel Chanecha, when God says that Sarah will have a son, he's very concerned lest Yishmael be disowned. And you also see him fighting with God about what? Don't destroy stone. That's what you see of Avraham Avinu. You see of Avraham Avinu, and you see one more thing. Take a look at Vayera, because we need this. We need this in order to get back to Eov.
Will you also stamp out the righteous along with the wicked?
Yeah. Noah doesn't argue with God about the righteous, the wicked. Abraham argues with God. You're going to destroy righteous people? How are you going to do that?
And look at Noah. He didn't save anybody. Except
just spending
that, all those years he's building.
Hema b'tzidkatam yatzilu nafsham. They, with their righteousness, can save their souls, but they can't save anyone else. And here you have Eov's sons. Eov's sons, what are they doing? They have tremendous wealth, and how are they spending their time?
Feasting.
They're spending their time feasting. What could they be spending their time doing?
Doing some good deeds.
They could be changing the world. They have the wherewithal to change the world.
Right.
Someone said something
outreach.
Here?
No, I said they could
outreach.
Be
they could be doing outreach.
Okay.
I want you to look at chapter 20. I want you to look at chapter 20 of Bereishit. Bereishit chapter 20. Perekat. This is a meeting between Abraham and Avimelech. Vayisa misham Avraham Arza Negev Vayeshev Ben Kadesh. Who wants to read this? Bereshit chapter 20. Not Yov chapter 20, Bereshit. Okay. Who wants to read? 20, Perikaf. I'd like Hebrew first. Judy, you want to read? Oh, who volunteered? Okay, go ahead, sir. Okay, great. So would you read this test in English?
Yes, and Abraham journeyed from thence toward the land of the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur. And he sojourned in Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in the dream of the night and said to him, behold, thou shalt die because of the woman whom thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife. And Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, wilt thou slay even a righteous nation? Said not he himself unto me, she is my sister, and she even herself said, he is my brother. In the simplicity of my heart and the innocence of my hands have I done this. And God said unto him in the dream, yea, I know that in the simplicity of thy heart thou hast done this, and I also withheld thee from sinning against me. Therefore I suffered thee not to touch her.
Now look at the next sentence, which is very important.
Now therefore restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he shall pray for thee, and thou shalt live.
You hear? We don't. Oh, I'm so. We need it up until those words. Is Abraham called a tzaddik?
No.
He's called a prophet. And what does a prophet do?
He prays for others.
He prays for others. You're never told Abraham is a tzaddik. You're told that Iyov was tam v'yashar v'yirei Elokim v'sar merah. That Yov was perfect and righteous and fearful of God and distanced himself from evil. You're told Noach is tzaddik, Noach was a righteous man, perfect in his generations, but you're not told that Abraham was a tzaddik. You're told that Abraham was a Navi. And you go to the man and he will pray for you. Turn to the end of the book of Yov. Then we have to go back to our Gemara and read Rav Soloveitchik. Look at the last chapter of the book of Iyov. Chapter 42, Membet. And let's start reading from Pasuk Zayin. Who's going to read for us? Pasuk 7. Who's going to read? Judy?
Vayihi afar diber Hashem et hadvarim ha'ele el Iyov, vayomer Hashem el lifaz atem ani, chara api v'chacha, v'shnei re'acha, hilo divartem
elai
nechona ka'avdi Iyov, v'ata k'chu lachem shiva parim v'shiva elim, l'chu el abdi Iyov, v'halisim ola ba'adfem, v'iyov adi, mispalel aleichem, ki im panav esa l'bilti asos nimchem nivola, ki lo dibartem elai nechona ka'abdi Iyov. V'yelchu elu'asim heimani, u'bilvad hashuthi, sofer han...
Hanamati, Sofa Hanamati.
V'yasu kasher diber aleihem Hashem. V'yisa Hashem es b'nei Iyov. V'Hashem shav eshivus Iyov. V'hispalalo v'adre ehu. V'yosef Hashem es kol asher li'Iyov v'mishneh.
Great. Maura, would you read to us, starting in English, starting from Pasuk 7?
I'm sorry.
Start from Pasuk 7, chapter 42, Pasuk 7.
Would you show point out to me?
Yeah. Pasuk. Here. Here you go.
It was after Hashem had spoken these words to Job that Hashem said to Eliphaz the Temanite, "My wrath, anger burns against you and against your two friends, for you did not speak properly about me as my servant Job did. And now take yourselves 7 bulls and 7 rams and go to my servant Job and bring them up as a burnt offering for yourselves, and my servant Job will pray for you. For his sake, I will show consideration not to do anything vile to you, for you did not speak properly about me as my servant Job."
Keep going.
So, Eliphaz. Eliphaz the Temanite and Bildad the Shuhite?
Yes.
And Zophar the Namathite went and did as Hashem had spoken to them. And Hashem showed consideration for Job. Hashem returned Job's captivity after he had prayed for his friend, and Hashem added on to all that Job had had until there was double.
Do you hear? When is Iyov redeemed?
When he prays.
When he prays, he is still suffering.
Yeah.
They're going to be punished unless he prays for them. They have to go and they have to apologize to Iyov, and they have to beseech Iyov to pray for them. Iyov will only be redeemed when he prays. Now, remember, what if we read about Avimelech?
He needed
Abraham to pray for him, because Abraham was a prophet. And as soon as Sarah is freed, what does Abraham do? Spontaneously. He prays. He doesn't have to be commanded to pray. He prays because he sees that Abimelech is in misery. He now has his wife back, and so he prays for them. It's spontaneous. Go back to the Gemara. You have these two voices in the Gemara. One is the voice of Satan, and one is the voice of God. And each one claims that there is a righteous person that has no parallel. God says that the righteous person is whom?
Iyov.
Satan says? Isn't it fascinating? Now, Yechezkel doesn't discuss Abraham. He's absent from the Pasuk. But the moment that we say what Yechezkel is obviously doing is contrasting Abraham and Noach by leaving out Abraham from the story. So you have to say Iyov is also contrasted with Noach. And I have to say, Daniel is as well, because we learned Daniel here. We never saw Daniel interacting with the Jews. What we saw Daniel doing was he had his prophecies. We saw how righteous a man he was. But we didn't in any way see him interacting with Gideon. We saw him. We saw his moral strength. We saw he's not to be intimidated as an elderly man. He's thrown into lion's den. You can't intimidate him. He's straight as a ruler. But what do you not see him doing? You don't see him helping others. You see the righteousness, but you don't see the helping of others. Let's look at Rabbi Soloveitchik. Okay. Yes.
Do you recall something about that? He was praying at the window.
That's right. For the redemption of Jerusalem. But the difference is that you're not talking about someone who, like Abraham, is reaching out to his fellow men. You know, when you say Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, he called out, what did he call out? We're not told what he called out. From his life, my guess is he called out, people be good to each other. People be just with each other. Because we're told, Lishmor Derech Hashem La'asot Tzedakah U'Mishpat, to do righteousness and justice. To do charity and justice. That's what I assumed he called out to people, to do charity and justice. He wasn't calling out saying Daven Mincha. What was he calling out? And it's not that we shouldn't Daven Mincha, but if you think of the life of Avraham Avinu, what do you think he's calling out? I mean, for many years I had thought, he builds an altar and he calls out in the name of God. So I assumed, you learn this as a child, so I assumed that he's calling out to people to be religious. He's calling out to people to believe in God. But when you start looking at Avraham's life circumstances, it seems to me that lishmar derech Hashem, following God's ways, is always connected at the time of Avraham Avinu with la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, doing justice, doing charity, and doing righteousness. So let's look at Rabbi Soloveitchik. Yes.
Can you clarify something for me? Maybe you said it already, and I'm just not actually getting it. I think the problem that I'm stuck on is why in the Gemara are the writers of this Gemara having Satan specifically representing Avraham? Because obviously,
isn't that amazing?
More overtly, like, and it's almost like the rabbis who put this together are really holding up Eov.
The rabbis who put this together are attacking Eov. The rabbis who put this together are attacking Eov, because what they're doing is they're putting words into, and they're interpolating words in the Pasuk. The way it works in the Pasuk is that Satan in the book of Eov, Satan comes amongst the angels to God, and God says to Satan, "Where have you been?" And Satan says, "Mishut ba'aretz v'hitalech ba." I've been roaming through the land and walking through the land. Because you have those words, hitalechba, there's a sort of exegetical anchor to grab onto. But this isn't coming from that exegetical anchor. This is coming from a place where Chazal feel that there is, possibly because of the psukim that I brought you in Yechezkel, that there's this contrast throughout the book of Bereshit between two personality types, between one person who is righteous and between someone else who helps the world, who makes the world a better place. And Avraham is a person who makes the world a better place, and Yechezkel comes along and says, well, these righteous people, they can save themselves, but what can't they do? They're not going to save the world. They're not going to save their children. Comes the Gemara, and the Gemara does something which your confusion is so well placed, because what's done in this Gemara is ostensibly outrageous. It's that God comes to you in the book of Eov. God is defending whom? Eov. I told you, I'm not giving you my view in this class. You'll get my view later on. But in the book of Eov, God is defending Eov, and Satan is attacking Eov. And we don't know why Satan is attacking Eov, but we think he's attacking Eov because he likes to attack everybody. He's the eternal cynic. He's the one who's always going to take that little pin and puncture a balloon of faith. Whatever we believe in, Satan is going to attack. In the Gemara gives us a totally different reading.
But my point is that the people who are pulling in these verses, I think it has more about what God said than about the character of Eov. As in, why is God putting Eov up?
God is putting Eov up in the Gemara.
I'm going back to like the writers of the Gemara. The Gemara
right.
itself, I understand. But I think that that's where my problem is why... The punchline of it that they use is Hashem and the quote, you know, from Eov. The problem that I'm having with it is that I think they're almost having the bigger problem with God holding up Eov.
With God supporting Eov. Yes, 100%.
Not Eov necessarily, but God.
Yes, 100%. Because they think that God should be
having somebody like Abraham.
That's right. That's exactly, you've got it. You've got this amazing Gemara. there are two voices here. There's the voice of Satan and the voice of God. And God selects Eov as being righteous. And Satan comes in order to challenge God. And Satan says, there's someone more righteous. According to God, Eov is the most righteous. And Satan comes let me try to explain in this reading of the Gemara. When Satan answers, Mishut ba'aretz u'mitalech ba, I've come from roaming and traversing the land. We thought that that's a report. Satan is reporting. The Gemara is reading it as no. Satan's not reporting. He's challenging.
He's giving him a mishut.
Yeah, he's challenging. He's saying, I've been with that person who's been fulfilling kum hitalech ba'aretz. And God says, have you found anyone more righteous than Eov? And Satan says, yes, indeed. Okay, let's look at Rabbi Salvechik.
Yes. The difference is that Abraham earned his place in history. Did Eov earn it, or was he given all this by God?
Okay. You're Ellen, you're with Rabbi Salvechik. You're all with Rabbi Salvechik. There's no one with me. I'm a great friend of Eov, Gloria.
Isn't it the job of the accuser? That's his job, to go through the world.
And accuse. But who's he accusing now?
God.
Okay. So who's gonna read Rabbi Salvechik for us? Ellen, you're a good reader. One can read.
Faith is fraught with
this book, Out of the Whirlwind, Mitoch HaSa'ara, has its name taken from the Book of Eov, and it's one of the many books of Rabbi Salvechik that were published posthumously from lectures that he gave.
Faith is fraught with absurdities. Otherwise, it would not be an act of faith, but one of logic. Absurdity means the nonconformity to either formal, logical criteria or the rules we infer from experience. However, is there only one logical discipline, or perhaps several? Is there only one kind of experience, or perhaps more than one? Perhaps faith is in full conformity with that different kind of logic and experience. Let me spell out clearly what I mean. The image of man in Judaism is reflected in two experiences, the cosmic and the covenantal.
By cosmic, Rabbi Salvechik always refers to being within the natural world. Man relates to God within the natural world when he sees the beauty of the world or the beauty of life and connects it together with God. But there's also the covenantal relationship. You'll see in a minute what he means.
At first, man emerges in the Bible out of the depths of nature. He belongs to the cosmic continuum. He is involved in a great drama which follows an unalterable order and sequence. In a word, there is liberation logic which reflects the wisdom of God embedded in nature. However, the Bible also sees man in a different role. Man in his encounter with God, who addresses himself to him, not from within, but from without the cosmic continuum, is exposed to an experience wholly other from the cosmic encounter. Any attempt to rationalize religious concepts overlooks this unbridgeable gulf which separates the cosmic from the covenantal experience, the logos of creation from the logos of the revealed message. When I speak of a conflict between religion and science, I have in mind not the discrepancy between dogma and scientific dicta, but the incongruity of the experiences which can be traced back to the duality of the addresses God delivers to man, the natural and the apocalyptic. Was Judaism preoccupied with the problem of suffering? Of course. When the blow strikes, the first question which pops up upon the lips of the sufferer is, why me? Why should I be different from the others? Why was I selected to explore the valley of sorrow? A feeling of envy fills out the heart of the afflicted. He envies everybody, pauper and prince, young and old. They were spared while I was picked out. The man who is bound to others by countless invisible threads is torn loose from his social bearings. He makes his exit from the community and retreats into himself because he was singled out.
The affliction of his own heart translates into prayer. What is prayer? The dialogue between man and God. Through the catastrophic, God reveals himself to man, and the latter, out of the depths of darkness, calls out and discloses his heart to God, who spoke to him through the whirlwind of distress. Job, while he enjoyed the divine blessings, rich, influential, respected by all, did not avail himself of this outpouring of divine kindness in the interest of a great destiny which he was called to fulfill. Of the object revelation was not accepted by him. Power, riches, and influence are given to an individual or a community for the sake of utilization for a worthy cause. Each gift presented to man by God entails a summons. If the latter is ignored, the great swing back from ontic to nihilistic revelation takes place. This is exactly what happened to Job. Interesting is the agadic approach to Job. The agada tried to have the chronology of the events narrated in the book of Job coincide with the most outstanding periods in the biblical history of our people. One agadic scholar maintained that Job was a contemporary with our patriarchs. Another advanced the guess that Job lived in the time of the Exodus. The third one identified him as living through the period of Ezra. The Agada was emphasizing the relevance of events which transpired during Job's life, the destiny-charged moments in our emergence as a people. Job could have contributed greatly to them, accelerating the historic tempo of realization and relieving the heroic figures who were involved in these dramatic developments of the great burden they carried. He could have, had he wanted, used his influence and spared Jacob, Moses, or Ezra agonizing moments of frustration, impotence, and mental distress. He had the means to alleviate their suffering, to promote the cause to which they were dedicated, to help them realize the covenantal vision. God addressed himself to Job through abundance and wealth, through the ecstasy of joy. Job missed the message. The pendulum swung toward the catastrophic revelation, to the dialogue, not via the universal harmony of the ontic consciousness, but through the whirlwind. The cosmic address was supplanted by the epileptic address. When Job complained and questioned the intelligibility of the dark night of the apocalypse, the absence of God, the Creator, he suddenly was confronted by God, again appearing in the whirlwind in a catastrophic, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. And what was the gist of the answer which Job revealed, received from the whirlwind? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare, and you have understanding. Who has laid the measures thereof, if you know? Know you the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? In short, Job did not grasp the meaningfulness of the cosmic drama to man. He did not encounter God in creation, nor did he comprehend his summons, which was communicated to Job through the magnificent order of cosmic grandeur and might. He failed at the level of ontic experience. Hence, God addressed himself to him through the cataclysm. Wow.
Okay, you have it. What do you have to say? What do you have to say?
I don't feel like that addresses the fact, though, that Theo brought those sacrifices in the first chapter, where he is showing this awareness of God with everything.
What does Rabbi Soloveitchik want of Theo? He wants Yov to be Avraham. He wants, this is refracting that Gemara wherein Satan, Rabbi Soloveitchik and Satan are exactly in the same place. Isn't it interesting? The Rabbi Soloveitchik and Satan both want Yov to be interfacing with the world, to be utilizing the gifts that he had in order to make the world a better place. And what do you see? You see Yov paying. He's a righteous man. Ish haya be'eretz utz Yov shmo. V'haya ha'ish ha'u tam v'yashar v'yirei Elokim v'sar meira. A man was in the land of Utz and his name was Yov. And this man was perfect and righteous and fearing of God, and he distanced himself from evil. We're hearing about his character, but what we're not hearing about, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, are his deeds. We're not hearing how he helped the world. We're not hearing how he saw himself as a shaliach. Do you see yourself as a shaliach? You've been given bounty. What do you do? What do you do with that bounty? Do you see yourself as having been given the bounty in order to change the world, in order do something? Or are you a recipient, or do you concentrate on your own personal righteousness? That's Rabbi Soloveitchik's approach. It's continuing the Gemara of contrasting. There are these two types. Yechezkel says, Daniel and Iyov and Noach, they'll always be able to save themselves because they're righteous. But they will not be able to save their children. Yes, Chavi. Wendy, if you're uncomfortable, so am I.
I'm uncomfortable. Yeah, yeah. I share Wendy's level of discomfort because as we were reading this, I immediately thought, oh, does that mean that the Holocaust occurred because people weren't pulling their weight? I think that this sort of logic, or lack thereof, is dangerous. Because he's trying to find a reason. Is there always a reason that bad things happen? You know, why do good things happen to them? Why do bad things happen to good people? And he's saying because he deserved it.
Not because Iyov deserved it. He's saying something that's a little bit different. He's saying God challenged Iyov. He challenged Iyov. He challenged Iyov with a world of bracha. He challenged Iyov with a world that was perfect. Iyov, can you meet my challenge? Can you take what you've been giving and do good with it? Can you see me? And
but
can you see...
That's what he may not have gone to the next level with what God gave him, but it's not that he took what God gave him and did bad with it.
He didn't do bad with it.
He struck down.
He did not see it as a challenge.
Rabbi Soloveitchik is saying... Rabbi Soloveitchik is saying... And remember, I'm with you. I told you, I'm explicating Rabbi right. Soloveitchik's view, which ultimately is the same view that you have Chazal taking in the Gemara, which is that there are righteous people. You know, the term at Tzadik in Peltz?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Charlotte
just
said
that.
Both
her father and my father were
both that expression.
Yeah.
A tzaddik in a fur coat, as distinct from a tzaddik who kindles a fire. Now, they both can be warm, but the difference is for everyone else around them. And Noach is a tzaddik in pelts, in a fur coat, and Abraham kindles a fire for everyone else.
But Noach's not struck down, but Eov is struck down. That's the problem with
Eo.
What is it that distinguishes?
Rabbi Soloveitchik says, does he say this? He doesn't say this, but it's clear. The moment of redemption for Eo is when he prays for his friends. When he prays for his friends, he joins Abraham. Because Abraham prayed for Avimelech. And what's so wonderful is that we're told Avimelech is supposed to tell Abraham, pray for me. But Abraham prays for him without being told. He prays for him without being told because of his concern for the world. You have someone here who is passionately committed to the world. Judy.
I'm with Rabbi Soloveitchik and the Gemara. I just wanted to comment that, I mean, I see the Satan as like some side of Hashem, and that's the side that's walking the land, in the land, looking at the people, and Hashem is saying, well, look at Eov, is, you know, the Hashem of the Shemayim, you know, being Adam Lamakom. So that, you know, from that point of view, if you don't walk the land, if you don't look at the people, if you don't see how things are on earth, then, you know, Eov is a tzaddik. But, you know, Eov doesn't look around him. And in the end, he has to, as you say, be told to bring a korban and be told to pray. He's a kind of narcissistic tzaddik.
Judy, I think your comment is brilliant. Wow. Yes.
Why?
Wait, Robin first.
Isn't it true that he was also one of the... not only prophet, but one of the advisors to Para, and when the question was asked about, you know, what should we do with the Jews, he wasn't righteous. He didn't answer.
There is within the Midrash the suggestion that there were several people present when Paro made his decision to enslave the Jews. One of the people who was present was Yitro. One of the present people present was Bilam, and one was Eov. So what did Yitro do? Yitro ran away. You can't lock horns with Paro, but Yitro gave up his position in the palace and he ran away. Eov kept quiet, according to this midrash. This midrash sounds to be outrageous because we have no hint that he was there. But the midrash is trying to say, you know, whenever you have an evil person, there are always going to be people around this evil person. And take a look, there are going to be the yes men, there are going to be the opponents, and then there are going to be those who keep quiet and who say, I didn't know, I didn't see, I didn't do anything. So the person who keeps quiet in that story is Eov. The person who says right on to Paro is Bilam. And the person who flees is Yitro. Yes. Oh, go.
It seems as though that...
Wait, just a moment. Go ahead.
It just seems that it's almost like Eov is similar to the son, Pesach, who doesn't know what to do, doesn't know...
Maybe he's silent because he hasn't figured out yet what he can do in order to oppose. I would say I'm with you because I think Yitro by fleeing isn't helping.
Yeah.
It seems according to Rabbi Soloveitchik that God, that he's kind of agreeing that he's on the side of Eov and Satan is on the side of Abraham, and Abraham is actually the better person as we're discussing. It's interesting that Satan was wise enough to be
yeah
to pick a better person, which is scary too because it gives a credibility to the evil that we like.
No. Let's get back to what Judy said. Judy said that Judy sees here two different voices of God. There's God in the heavens and there's God who comes down to the earth, and God who comes down to the earth is going to be judging people's interactions with each other, and God who's there in the heavens is looking to see, is the man a righteous person? But remember, Abraham's yardstick of righteousness is always going to involve people. He tells God, Chamin alecha, God forbid that you should destroy stone. God forbid, heaven forbid, how can you do such a thing? Yes, Leah.
But it's also more complex because I think every person has a different role or a different contribution to the world. Like, so for example, there are those who go out and outreach, and then there are those who sit and learn. And, you know, we're told also that when there was war in Israel, you know, in Eretz Israel, we needed people to learn just to keep the Torah alive, even if they just learned for themselves. It was very, very powerful. So they may not be capable to do the other thing. You just need all these little different facets to, you know, to make the world, I guess, a better place. And, you know, so, I mean, I think that in itself is just learning. Of course, it's great to learn and to be able to write books and to give it to the rest of the world, but just, you know, to sit in yeshiva and learn isn't, I know there's a lot of controversy about that, but there's a whole
way of thinking.
Yeah. That just bringing the Torah into the world is very powerful.
That's where I think the reading of today's... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That's where I'm disagreeing with how we read the Gemara. Is I think that that's more... They're lining up Satan and Abraham. I'm disagreeing, basically. I'm sorry. I think it's more of that. I think that the people who put the Gemara in are more on the side of Eov. They're not disagreeing.
You think they're on the side of Eov?
I understand that every other person in this room is completely not. You know, I get that.
Well,
I think it's a whole different philosophical. You know, it's like in the, you know, in the Pirkei Avot, is it better to learn? Is it better to do to this? I mean, it was on the better to be the more contained righteous. I think that's what they're saying.
Okay, so we have Gloria, and we have Suri, and we have Judy, and we have Hedda. Let's go.
It's confusing, to say the least, but aren't we always taught Olam Omei Al HaTorah V'Al Avodah V'Gemilas Chasadim? And these three approaches could could be in one person, or they can express itself in, along what you said, for individual abilities.
That there are some people who are this, and there are some people who are that, and there are some
in
people
words,
the next thing. And as a society, we're going to combine our talents and our gifts. Okay? I think, Suri, you were next.
And I was just thinking that we've been focusing on Noah's description as each study in the Abzorah itself, but it also says, Esa Elohim his Halef Noah. If you contrast that with Abraham is Mithalef Ba'aretz, he's out there doing his Mithalefing in Aretz, whereas Noah is.
Is walking with God. Okay, so you have Gloria feeling that everybody has their role in society, and Suri feels, it's so interesting that the one who's really chosen by God is the one who is mitalech ba'aretz, walking in the land, rather than Noah who's walking with God. Hedda, I think you were next.
Yeah, I was thinking that. For Satan to be supporting Abraham as the most righteous, they have a commonality in that they both challenged God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just found that interesting that he would choose someone who is a little bit like me in the sense that I'm challenging you.
Yes, so I think we're going to end here. And let me tell you what you'll be getting an assignment. Let me tell you what I would like you to do. Starting from the next class, and I don't know yet whether the next class is in January or February. You received a February date. It's not clear to me yet whether I will be in the United States in January. So I will be sending you sometime shortly the assignment, and we're going to get into the cycle of the friends' speeches to Eo. I think you'll find it fascinating.
Thank you,
Yoshi.
Thank you. What does
Guatemala mean? What does Guatemala mean?